Hi everyone, I think we will get started amongst this cult talk. Holden is the best type of cult.
Yes, exactly.
Well, really glad you all are here. My name is Maddie Smith. My pronouns are they, them. And we're really excited to talk about faithful advocacy today.
Hello, my name is Jessica Zimmerly. My pronouns are she, her, and I am the advocacy director here at Earth Ministry and Washington Interfaith Power and Light. So I get to have the great joy of making it really easy and accessible for people of faith to step into the sphere of faithful advocacy, of speaking up in our democracy and policy processes. So our goal today is to give you tools to do that, and to start, Maddie is going to provide kind of an overview of advocacy.
Yeah, thanks, Jess. So to start us off, I want to do a temperature check of how comfortable folks are with advocacy as you see it. And so has everyone heard of Fist of Five Fingers? So that's where, like, a fist would be, gosh, I don't know anything about advocacy, I've never done it. You know, maybe a two is something like, you know, I've signed some petitions, I care about it, but like maybe I haven't gotten involved. And five is like, I'm an expert on this. So just to get a check of the room, can everyone do fist to five on like where you feel and your comfort level with advocacy? Love it, awesome. We have a group of experts here, it looks like. Janice, you had a four.
I had a four. Five is expert. Four is, you know,
I've marched.
Moving
forward. Awesome.
We've marched. I've never been at a march that they said leave now or be arrested. So
oh,
I don't
okay.
think of myself as hardcore. I'm
okay.
Janice has.
Oh my gosh.
But I've never been arrested.
Yeah.
Well, let's, even though folks have a pretty good understanding of where we're at, we just want to start with the basics. And like, we have this super fun handout called Government 101, which probably does not include everything about the government that you would want to know, but it's a pretty good start.
Sounds good.
And can I have one of those, AC?
Of course.
Hey, Hal.
Hey.
And so when we talk about like just basic overview, how the government is organized, we talk about, you know, the three branches of government, which most folks are probably pretty familiar with. We have legislative, executive, and judicial. And we'll talk a bit more about this, but a lot of our advocacy at Earth Ministry White Bull actually is in two of these branches, the legislative branch, and which is passing bills into law in the state legislature and then at the federal level in Congress. And then the executive branch, which not only, like if we're talking about the state of Washington, not only includes Governor Inslee, but also includes all the state agencies that are also part of the executive branch. And we end up doing a lot of advocacy there in terms of implementation of laws that have already been passed, because that's also really important, is how we implement those laws. And then we do less in the courts, but that's also a really important process for environmental justice and like how that works. I don't know if I need to go over all of this handout for you all. For folks that live in Washington, there's a really cool website on the Washington State Legislature website. Is actually pretty great and has a lot of resources. And so you can go, if you don't know who your representatives are or what legislative district you're in, there's a really handy map where you can just plug in your address. In the recent primary election, I learned that I was in a new legislative district because of the redrawing of the districts that recently happened. And so that was news to me. And so that might be your case as well. Although I imagine that's not the case for Holden Village. And then just real quick, you know, we talk about different levels of government as well. The federal government, state government, and then local government, which could be everything from county council and county executive here in Washington to like a city council. And so a lot of our advocacy, we do a little bit at the federal level, specifically around salmon recovery, because a lot of that is at the federal level, because we'll talk a little bit more about that. And then a lot of our work is at the state level, which means anyone in the state of Washington can like talk to your representatives about it, about the issues. And then we also do some local level stuff, just depending on what's happening. Recently, in the past couple of years, we've been doing a lot of local level stuff in the city of Tacoma around fossil fuels. And of course, we're small and can't do everything that's mission aligned or that we would want to, because there's a lot of environmental injustices out there. But we do, you know, focus on these different campaigns at these different levels when it makes sense and is strategic. So one thing we also like to emphasize for folks is that sometimes there's a myth floating around that congregations and houses of worship can't get involved in advocacy because of their nonprofit status. Well, that's not necessarily true. And as a 501c3 earth ministry, we do a lot of advocacy, but we can't endorse candidates because of our nonprofit status or tell folks who to vote for. But we can tell folks to vote their values, and we can advocate for specific policies. And so that is true also for congregations and houses of worship. And I know sometimes congregations are wary to wade into that world, but it's perfectly legal, and we have a lot of congregations that are involved in that. So now I want to talk a little bit about our issue areas of the campaigns we're working on. And of course, we can't work on everything, and we always get emails all the time of folks who are like, you know, this thing is happening, it's really important to me as a person of faith. And you know, it sucks, sometimes we have to pick and choose. So here's a little brief. Jess, do you want to write these issue areas on the board? Oh, sorry, buddy. Just hurt her finger and I just asked her to write things. Sorry. Okay. And so we have worked in four main issue areas for a while that encompasses a lot of different things. One of them is climate justice, and that can, as you can imagine, that involves a lot of different things. Everything from like the 100% clean energy law that passed in Washington State. Gosh, what year was that? 2018? Jessica was here for that. She's been here a while.
And that is transitioning our grid to be 100% electric by 2045, I believe. So getting off of all fossil fuels when you plug in to an outlet.
Yes, very exciting. And I know other states have policies like that, but I can't rattle them off the top of my head. Right now, we actually just finished a comment period for an issue in this climate justice framework, which I'll just talk briefly about. How many folks are familiar with a clean fuel standard? I don't expect many. AC. Haha, Janice. Okay, great. And so what we helped pass a bill a couple of years ago to establish a clean fuel standard in Washington, which means that like fuels that are burned in vehicles, like transportation vehicles, such as cars and other vehicles, have to like have to reduce their carbon intensity of like how they're burned. Did I say that right?
Yeah.
Okay. And it's also a major environmental justice issue, because when you clean up our fuels, like I can't remember the number, but it was something like saving a large amount of money in healthcare costs of folks in our state because of decreased pollution that people are breathing in. And if you were at our environmental justice workshop yesterday, a lot of this is often in communities of poor folks and people of color. And so it's an incredible environmental justice issue beyond just decreasing greenhouse gas emissions. So we've been involved in the implementation of that law. The Department of Ecology is working on rulemaking for that. Right now, the Department of Ecology is Washington State's EPA. So that's exciting. Jess, do you want to talk about salmon because you're the expert?
So one of our focus areas that has been really emphasized this year is around salmon recovery in southeast Washington in the lower Snake River Basin. There are four dams that are outdated and produce a small amount of electricity but create big barriers for salmon, which in turn also leaves our orcas hungry in the Salish Sea. And so this is an issue. Anytime it really comes down to salmon and orca campaigns, we look to Native Nations and the leadership of tribal governments and also Indigenous leaders. And so this is one that we work on following the lead of nations including the Nez Perce or Nimiipuu. The Yakima Lummi Nation is very involved because of the orca connection. Umatilla in Oregon, it's a cross-border issue. And I think this campaign is an interesting one because if anyone's aware of this issue, it's like a very hot-button topic, right? Especially in eastern Washington. It can be triggering for folks, and there's kind of a division around it. So we'll get a bit more into like what makes advocacy, faithful advocacy, different in a bit. But an example of it with this campaign is just holding space for dialogue. So we have hosted a series of events that we called Loaves and Fishes, and we brought together community members to hear from a Native leader, a farmer, a wheat farmer, a fisherman, and had a pastor mediating that conversation and assuring people that we want to keep communities whole and address all who rely on the river, but that we first and foremost see this as a matter of treaty violation. And that's a deep moral issue for us. So we could talk a ton more about that. There's a lot happening right now currently in Washington. The governor and Senator Murray just put out a big report with some steps forward. It wasn't quite as strong as we wanted, so we'll be continuing to speak up on that, and that is going to be a focus coming up this fall.
And this is an example of one of the areas where we do some federal advocacy because the Lower Snake River dams are operated by the Bonneville Power Administration, which is a federal agency, and so even though the dams are located in completely within the state of Washington, it's a federal issue, so that can be complicated. And so we're really looking to our senators and Congress to lead on this. Yeah, Janice.
I'm curious how you respond, and I'm not saying it's not the right side of the issue, but it feels like taking out dams, a lot of people are going to say, well, we're trying to get to not use fossil fuels. And when you take out the dams, you're putting more pressure on the fossil fuels. So I'm just curious. I mean, I'm sure that tension comes up. I can't think of
absolutely, yeah. Yeah, so Janice's question was about how we respond to, folks who are like, wait, but we want clean hydropower, and we don't want to add more fossil fuels. Well, it's really complicated, and not all dams are created equal, I will say. And so, we're not talking about any of the dams on the Columbia River that do produce a lot of electricity for our state. These specific three dams on the Lower Snake River are really old, they're outdated, they're in need of a lot of investment to keep them you know, safe and up to date and operating. And so, like, we're at a point where it's like, you know, they need all this investment anyway, and salmon populations are going to continue to deteriorate. You know, what do we do with that? I'll add that these three dams actually do not produce as much power as people would want you to think. And scientists have talked about how, you know, like, to save the salmon population on the Snake River, like, removing the dams is the best solution to have populations bounce back. Do you want to add anything?
I'll just add, I think this is an interesting one that shows how issue areas really overlap, right? So part of the reason why we're focused on this river in this region is because as our climate increasingly warms, our rivers are warming. And salmon can't survive. They start to get very sick when the water gets above 68 degrees Fahrenheit. And so as climate change continues on its course, the lower Snake River Basin is going to have some of the coolest, like, high mountain streams where salmon habitat will continue to be viable moving forward. So it's kind of one of those issue areas that does touch on energy, that does touch on climate, that does get beyond just the species extinction issue and see the intersectionality of the work with the tribal justice piece at the core, certainly. And I think we'll leave it at that. Honestly, we can do a whole workshop on this if that is of interest to you. We do it quite regularly. But we're just trying to, I think, for now, just give a taste of what we're working on, and then mostly want to focus on giving you the tools to apply advocacy across any issue that you are interested in.
Yeah, so real quick, our last two issue areas are toxic chemical reform and fossil fuels, as you can probably imagine. And so Earth Ministry has been involved in toxic chemical reform for quite a while, and that's fun for me because I get to use my chemistry degree within that. And one of the main toxic chemicals we've been focused on eradicating within our state is PFAS, P-F-A-S, which stands for polyfluoroalkyl substances, which is a bit of a mouthful. Does anybody know what, are you familiar with PFAS? So think like Teflon, nonstick products, Scotchgard, like a lot of raincoats have this coating of PFAS on them to keep them dry because it has water repellent properties. The problem is that it's super toxic and stays around in the environment for a really long time. The great thing is that Washington State is sort of leading on this. And so right now we are part of a campaign of implementation of a bill we helped pass a couple years ago. And right now this is the Safer Products for Washington program. So the Department of Ecology is looking at common consumer products that include PFAS and looking at, are there safer alternatives? Are they viable? Are companies using them? And so that's something that's really exciting that's sort of leading the nation in that aspect. And if you sign up to get our updates on our clipboard over here, this fall we're going to have some advocacy around that that will be really important to get involved in. And lastly, fossil fuels, which is a big one. So in our work the past couple of years, this has mainly revolved around fighting new fracked gas infrastructure. A few years before that, it was really focused around coal export terminals on the West Coast, of which all of them got defeated, which was really exciting, including, so that's like sort of the legacy of people of faith opposing new fossil fuel projects in Washington. And now that's sort of, you know, coal export terminals are dead in the state, and now they're moving towards, okay, fracked gas with a lot of greenwashing and saying it's clean when it's really not. And so we've been involved in defeating large methanol refinery in Kalama on the Columbia River. And then currently we're in solidarity with the Puyallup tribe in Tacoma opposing a fracked gas facility of liquefied natural gas. And there's a whole lot we could talk about that. Again, a whole nother workshop, but we won't do that today. And some of the fossil fuel work also centers around land use, because if you can get a really strong land use regulations in place, then you can't build these facilities or you can't expand them. So that's an aspect of our work as well.
And I know Maddie touched on like how we have to discern where we participate, but I wanna just share that Earth Ministry is in multiple coalition spaces and really look toward our partners within the environmental justice movement especially, but we you know, inhabit this stance with a foot in both worlds of being within the secular movement and bringing people of faith into that as a unique constituency. So use our discernment kind of in alignment with what the overall movement is going towards and where we think faith communities can have a significant positive impact. But we never do this work alone, which I think is really important.
Yeah, we're too small to make, you know, our own big policy priorities. And so that's what's really great about working together with other folks. Okay, let's shift gears a bit and talk about what is advocacy. So as you can probably imagine, advocacy is a lot of different things. Does anyone want to raise their hand and just shout out like what you think an example of advocacy is? Let's do some brainstorming.
You mean like marching?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Marching, Nathan says marching.
Education.
Education.
Kind of like harnessing collective power of people for change.
Yeah, I like that definition. Harnessing collective power, the people for change. That's good. That needs to be like on a wall or something, I feel like.
Yeah. And with that comes building partnerships to do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, and so at Earth Ministry, we like to give people of faith and faith communities the tools to be faithful advocates within the different government systems and campaigns that we talked about. And so advocacy actions that we've supported folks on or do ourselves can be anything from, you know, meeting with elected officials as like a lobby meeting, just as a lot of that during the state legislature, which is super fun. And just like meeting with them, telling your story and why you care about this. And, you know, we have a lot of, not so much during the pandemic, we've had like, because the state legislature has been virtual, and so that actually has opened doors for people to like talk to their legislators on Zoom, depending on whether they take the meeting or not, which is another story. But folks also do a lot of writing to elected officials, whether that be through Earth Ministry and our talking points, or just like emailing your representative and saying, hey, like I really want you to vote on this bill and get your colleagues to do it. Like this is really important to me because. One thing that we did a lot of during pre-pandemic was doing a literature drop, which is where you go around to an elected official's office and just leave information and say, like, this is why we're here. Usually you won't be talking to the representative themselves, but their staff people will definitely let their boss know that you stopped by, that you dropped this off, and that this is really important to you. Jess did a lot of that pre-pandemic. Super fun.
And I'll put in, you know, sometimes when you meet with an aide instead of the senator representative themselves, it can feel like a little deflating, like, oh, I encourage you to check that feeling because the aides have a tremendous amount of power and influence about what actually gets to the senator's desk and onto their radar. So that is, you know, not something to say all shucks about too much.
They're the ones who write the bills.
Yep.
Yeah. It's I mean, in our state, it's rare that this senator
is actually writing the bill. The aides, the legislative aides, and there's, I mean, there's a lot of them, and some have more power than others. But yeah, don't, I agree with you. Don't discount what they can do.
Indeed.
Yes. Don't discount it. Another thing that we really enjoy doing is preparing people of faith to be at public hearings, whether that be in person or online, and supporting those who want to testify and share their story about why this is important. So that could be a public hearing during the legislative session within the legislative branch of a committee of the House or Senate in the state, or a lot of our public hearings end up being within the executive branch of like state agencies who are taking comments on implementation of a law, and like people can have a really big impact there. And so we testify at public hearings and also support faith leaders and lay leaders to do that as well, which is one of my favorite things to do, is give someone the tools to speak out faithfully and then like see them do that in the public sphere, which is really powerful. And the last thing I have on here is participating in public comment periods. So like the law for a lot of state agencies and other agencies is that they have to collect public comment during the implementation or rulemaking of a bill and a law. So that is a really important time to engage. And so we like help write talking points for folks who want to like very quickly online submit a comment. Actually, earlier this week, I was submitting a bunch of comments that folks had sent me from Holden Village, thanks to Starlink, for the Clean Fuel Standard comment period. And it's really interesting to look through the list of, like, because it's all a public process, they have the list of all the comments, and you can see who submitted and who wrote it. And especially this last week of the comment period, one thing I especially noticed was it was all our people of faith and then industry, with a few like city governments that had thrown in comments as well. And so like when the faith community shows up in a big way during a public comment period, like people notice. And like we had an example last year during a toxics advocacy action where we were pretty much the only organization generating grassroots comments. And when I say grassroots, I mean like from regular people and not from paid lobbyists or organizations. And they, like, after the comment period, they were like, wow, like there was overwhelming public support for speeding up this process, so that's what we're going to try to do. And so that was really exciting, and a big example where people of faith made a big impact in that specific campaign. Okay. Any questions? Hal?
Could you talk a little bit about how your advocacy works in terms of fundraising? And I would ask two questions. One, how do you think about your fundraising generally, and what do you need next if fundraising could be available?
Great question. We're always fundraising as a nonprofit. And so our main three funding areas are through grants that we apply for and receive, individual donations, and then we also have strong support from houses of worship and congregations financially. So those are sort of our main three areas. And I'll say that a lot of the grants we apply for do go towards funding some of these advocacy campaigns and funding staff time on that. Not all of the grants, but a lot of them are through coalition partners or written to foundations that really want to fund this advocacy work. And some of them have different rules about like lobbying, etc. But advocacy in state agencies isn't lobbying. So that's a way to get funding from foundations that don't necessarily want to support lobbying or can't for whatever legal reason, but they're still supporting our advocacy. So that's a good question. How? We are always, you know, limited by our budget because we have a small staff. And so, like, doing that advocacy work definitely depends on what funding we get, for sure. And so when we talk about fundraising to individual donors, it is about our advocacy work and our other program work and just supporting this movement within the state of Washington. And Jen, does that answer your question? Okay, super duper. Yep. Yes, I have to do a lot of fundraising for my job too, so always thinking about it. Okay, we're going to switch gears and talk a bit about why be a faithful advocate. So what makes faithful advocacy a little different from secular advocacy, which most folks are more familiar with, we find. And so one thing I always like to remind folks who may be nervous about meeting with elected officials or making their voice heard is that the elected officials work for you. Like, they work for you. They're not, often they're not as smart as you think they are. Like, that's probably accurate. They work for you, and they are supposed to care about what the public thinks because you hired them, essentially. And one thing we also like to share is that in faithful advocacy, it involves a lot of storytelling and less of, like, this policy number, this, like, these facts, etc. So we are a really big believer in storytelling. And those stories stick with elected officials. And they, will use them to share with their colleagues, to convince them to, like, really support a bill or to at least not be, like, so oppositional. And sometimes those stories that you, like, share with elected officials or their aides get told on, like, the Washington State Senate floor, for example. And so those stories can be really powerful and often stick in the minds of elected officials a little bit longer than, like, say, a lobbyist that comes to them with all of the, like, specific policy, like, facts and numbers. One super fun fact that we always like to share is, guess how many contacts, so, like, different people or the same person contacting, mostly different people, right, contacting a legislator, guess how many contacts you need to, like, shift their thinking on an issue, even just slightly. Anybody want to shout out a number? Less.
Wow.
So it's been shown that 7 contacts to a legislator can create change. And that's not, like, moving from no to, like, oh yeah, yes, but it's like a slight shift. Like, it might be like, okay, I see that my constituents are reaching out to me about this. And maybe I won't oppose it as, like, I won't strongly oppose it because it's clear people care about. And, like, there's seven, at least 7 of us in this, there's exactly 7 of us in this room. And so, like, a small community or even a couple individuals can really, like, create change. Because when you write to your legislator in Washington State, which is very easy to do because of our system, which Jess will probably talk a little bit more about. It can, like, aides tell their boss, like, okay, we got this number of emails today in favor of this bill, like, and maybe they didn't know anything about this bill, and they're like, oh, shoot, I better go look this up and make sure I'm versed on it because my people clearly care about this. And so, like, the 7 contacts thing makes me feel more powerful. And, like, is always surprising to people, I think, when we share that, because it's really not that many. I Okay. One thing we like to, hey Kia, one thing we like to really push in talking about faithful advocacy is faithful advocacy is really a moral anchor for an issue. And so, like, you don't have to be a policy expert to care about something and to talk to your legislators about it. And I think that's a barrier that stops some people is thinking, oh, I like don't fully understand this policy. I'm not a policy expert. Well, like no one should have to be a policy expert to like talk about what matters to you and why it's important. And so that's where the storytelling comes in, and that's where the faith community comes in as sort of a moral anchor for an issue. And it's important to remember that legislators are often people of faith, too. Jessica has this super fun, slightly creepy booklet that you can buy every legislative session that lists the religious tradition that legislators have reported themselves as. And so that can be a way to reach legislators that secular organizations don't necessarily have. Yeah. And then, like, faithful advocacy to us is also important as a way to complement individual actions people are taking, whether that be, like, eating less meat or, like, installing LEDs. Like, that's a lot of the work that our congregations do. And we know it's also important to advocate within this system for change for the policies that we want to see. Okay, I think I'm going to pass it to Jessica now. We love faithful advocacy.
Thanks, Maddie. I'll share another story.
Yes, share that story.
Yeah. Yes, okay. Maddie was mentioning, like, oh, like what faithful advocacy can open doors that could be more firmly closed for other organizations. So one example I like to share is there was a Republican congressman serving the Issaquah area. He's no longer in office, but early in my time at Earth Ministry, we were setting up meetings with him, and he's Lutheran, and I'm Lutheran, and so I brought in like a Luther quote, and we were there to talk about public lands, and we spent the time to discuss like how our spirituality is rooted in and feels very resonant in time outside, and and we followed up, and we eventually asked this person to be a leader within the public lands work we were doing and to oppose Arctic drilling, and he ended up being one of four Republicans who voted against Arctic drilling. I'm not going to say that's just because we asked him, but who knows. And like that was a person who it was hard for Sierra Club or the Nature Conservancy to get a meeting with, but for us we could have that different type of connection that can open one's mind and heart a bit. Okay, so we've discussed kind of what advocacy looks like, some of what we're doing, how it makes an impact, and we're gonna be spending the last bit of our workshop here, I'm really leaning into how to be a faithful advocate and show up in a way that I like to say is faith forward. It's pretty shameless in participating as a person of faith. So to start kind of just with what makes it different. So I'm going to do kind of a side-by-side talk through. Advocacy is democracy in action. Faithful advocacy is faith in action. Advocacy is speaking up to influence decisions within political, economic, and social institutions. And faithful advocacy is speaking up for systemic justice based on our religious values and traditions. For Christians, that could be following in Christ's footsteps or co-creating a kingdom. And advocacy is addressing root causes of issues through public policy, but faithful advocacy is co-creating a just and loving society for all.
Did anyone go to Jason's first talk on Tuesday about the role of religion in public life? Kia did, and Janice did. Okay. Well, he played a series of clips about examples of religion in public life. And the Earth Ministry team is sitting there like, well, of course, like, religious communities should be out and, like, talking about justice as part of their faith. And so that's related to this other session and how, you know, really what the role of faith should be in our, in my opinion, my agenda. Yeah.
Okay, so I'm going to share a few attributes of faithful advocacy that we lean into, and then we'll get into the fun stuff with practicing and giving you some frameworks to play with. So first and foremost, faithful advocacy, and maybe, and Maddie, do you want to just write the attributes up? It's values-based. So really showing up and naming your values. If you were with us for our first workshop on storytelling, we did some practice with that. So that carries across all of our work in our interpersonal dynamics and in our congregational life and in our advocacy. And what this does is it gets into the heart more than the head, which Maddie touched on briefly, but really that is proven and shown to move people far more than facts and figures. So if I say, oh, there's this many tons of carbon dioxide being emitted by this super polluter, and we need to reduce that, blah, 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 number. Okay. If I say, hey, I grew up in the Central Valley of California and literally thought spare the air days where the air quality was too bad to go to recess was a normal thing. That's kind of got a different punch, right?
What are you going to remember?
Right. With our values, we're seeking justice and equity as really core values. And I think we had our environmental justice workshop yesterday, but really, as we're seeking this vision of a more just and sustainable future, being really mindful of how we go about it is important. So following the leadership of impacted communities, of those on the front lines of the climate crisis, of Native nations who have had a healthier relationship with the land for far longer than settlers. So following the lead, and then when possible, advocate alongside or even just behind those who are on the margins and don't speak for them. And then with our values, we bring in hope, which I think is super important in this really heavy, hard work. So for me, that looks like believing in God's grace and goodness and the movement of a spirit in the world and the arc ultimately bending towards justice. So there's a lot of doom and gloom that can show up, and the faith community brings that hope-filled presence that can help sustain a movement and keep it going forward. Okay, another attribute is that faithful advocacy builds bridges. So that's an example I shared earlier with the salmon recovery and our loaves and fishes conversations. Getting to have meetings with folks that might not take other meetings is another example. But we are able to hold space for hard conversations and for dialogue and collaboration and bringing people together around values, which we all have guiding who we are. We just have to figure out what resonates with one another. A really cool story that embodies that is that Earth Ministry was really pivotal in helping shut down Washington's last coal-fired power plant. So this was in Centralia, Washington. The TransAlta plant, it's still on its phase out, but it's pretty close. And it was, a heated conversation and kind of became a jobs versus environment dichotomy, false dichotomy. That's important. And a local pastor that Earth Ministry organized came and sat down at the table with the coal plant workers and with the environmentalists and was able to have that space for dialogue that says, you are seen, you are cared for. We're going to be sure that there's transition elements in place, so there's job retraining, and that your community receives the support you need. We're not just going to pull the rug out from under you. And now, that plant, as it's almost off, getting offline here, is transitioning into Washington's largest solar farm, which I just think is pretty cool. You know, that conversation provided the reassurance that was needed to really come together around this and say, we do want clean and healthy jobs. We do want security and well-being for the community, and we're going to make sure that happens together. And my last attribute of faithful advocacy is that it's supported by community. So you're not a lone wolf on the venture, but your message can be sustained by your community when you do this work together, and also amplified. So sometimes I joke, anyone know Lord of the Rings? The scene with Aragorn.
All of it.
Yes. Okay. So the scene with like the ghost army and Aragorn kind of like swoops in and saves the door. That is how I feel as a faithful advocate at times, because when you show up and you say, oh, hey, my name is Sister Jessica. I'm a deaconess. I have a community of sisters around the country. I'm a member of Ballard First Lutheran Church, and we have our green team doing X, Y, and Z. You know, you bring in that ghost army of folks, because our houses of worship are one place where we do come together around shared values. So it's another, you know, balance. You're not going to talk on behalf and say, like, everyone at my church thinks exactly like I do on this policy. But you can say, we share these values, and we're trying to live into it, and this, we'd like to see it reflected in your leadership, elected official. So that is kind of an amplifier effect. Also, very pragmatically, people of faith vote. So we are a constituency that raises some attention when we do show up, because they know that their jobs depend on getting the votes. And then, let me get back to my notes here. And then for me, I think the sustainability of it, doing it in community, is really important, of remembering that I'm not alone, that I'm part of a movement of people who believe another world is possible and are willing to help participate in making that vision a reality.
I just want to share a cute story from my congregation. I have a lot of old lady friends in my congregation, as you can probably imagine. And two of my good friends formed an advocacy duo together during the legislative session for the past couple of years. And so, you know, while it might seem like it can seem hard to like get involved and like do these things, but they like did it together a couple times a week, or would text each other and be like, hey, like, I just saw this thing, like, let's write our legislators today on this. And so that's like a really unique support system that developed out of a faith community. And it's just a really great story I like to share.
I do love that. I'm going to pause there and see if there are questions or thoughts in response to kind of the overview about it, the unique elements of faithful advocacy.
I was just curious if we could get your different definitions, or your comparing definitions between advocacy versus faithful advocacy.
Yeah.
If we could, if there's anywhere that's written down, like on your website or
anything. Oh, yeah. And I have it here, so you can, okay. I can just give this to you when we're done.
All right.
Good. What's your name?
Katie.
Katie
sings great.
You do, I've noticed this. Okay. Other thoughts, questions? Should we get into our storytelling component? We have another handout, yay. Okay, so I'm gonna give you this is the full recipe and tool for faithful advocacy. I'm also gonna give you a condensed version, because sometimes you're just on the go and you're like, what do I say? So think of it as like, I don't know, I was trying to make a food analogy like a quick bake bread versus
a bread.
Here it is. So with our advocacy, we want to show up, we want to share our stories, we want to say our values. And this handout is a tool for you to practice that and to kind of outline your story. So we'll walk through this and then I'll give you the condensed version. So you are the hero here. Mm-hmm. Right? You are Frodo. I don't know if he's really the hero. I don't know. We could debate. Sam's the real hero. Or the Eagles. I don't know. We digress. But you're the hero in this story. And so first, naming who you are and sharing the part of your identity that resonates with the topic that you are discussing. So we all are multidimensional people. So thinking about the part of you that makes the most sense when you're talking about salmon, when you're talking about toxics. I often bring forward that I'm a godmother. I have my godbabies in Bellingham who I think about a lot, and I care about their future and want them to have clean air and healthy water and all of that. You could identify yourself as someone who loves the outdoors, who has been committed to sustainability and simplicity at Holden Village for the last however many years. Who is a person who breathes air, you know? We like, oftentimes people, like, I get kind of a hesitation of like, oh, well, I'm not someone important. You are. You are hecka important. And you can just simply say, like, I'm a community member. Like, I live here, and I want to thrive and breathe the air around the Tacoma Tide Flats without feeling like, oh, gosh, what are all these smells that I'm inhaling and the toxins connected to them? With this, we also encourage you to share your faith community, so that gets back to the kind of amplifier effect. You can always say you're a member of the Earth Ministry WIPL community. We love that. A lot of the policymakers here in Washington are familiar with our work, and so that can add some cred. Say, like, where you live. If you're in district, that really makes a difference to folks. So, like, when we do things like the lit drops that Maddie was mentioning, when we go door-to-door to all the different offices, we often bring community members with us, and when we get to their legislator's office, that's when they're most likely to actually, like, pause their work and come and hear from you, is when you're like, oh, hey, I live in the Greenwood neighborhood, you know? Connecting to show that you're really in their community. Okay, so once you figure out what part of your story you're bringing forward, you want to ground it in your values. So here's a list. You can think about these things. You can also go beyond these things, of course. But kind of pulling out these values that can connect with folks really across barriers once again. And then if we go to the back, we say, meet the villain, ooh, hiss. So it's important to remember like who the actual villain in the story is. And most often than not, it's industry, it's money. But it can be easy to vilify the person you're talking to, the elected official. And no one likes to be attacked, right? So
even if they deserve it.
Even if they, yeah. Yeah, we could also go down that. But to, you know, hold grace and understanding that they're a human trying to do their job. They're being influenced, perhaps immorally, in our opinion. But at the end of the day, like, they're not the villain in the story. And you want to invite them in to be a hero with you and give them an opportunity to be a leader and feel good about themselves. So that's important. If you can find something, even if you don't love your elected, find something to thank them for. That also really can help, because they get asked to do so much all the time. And so we'd like to kind of do like a compliment sandwich type thing of starting a meeting by saying, thank you for what you did recently to help us get on the way with our clean fuel standard. and we want to be sure how we're doing that is centering the feedback of frontline communities, so please strengthen the rule in this way. Okay, and then this last part here is your quest. So sharing a vision of what you're ultimately working towards. It's always good to have a very clear ask of what you want. So those are the talking points that often Earth Ministry WIPL provides. And that's, you know, in strategic alignment with the coalitions that we participate in. But around that vision and that way of getting there, let me rephrase that. Sharing the vision and then giving the leader the path that you would like to see, a really clear path to get there. So the shortened version of this, when you're like, I don't know, you might run into your city council member at the grocery store. And you're like, oh, what do I say? Shortened version.
Or at the zoo.
Or at the zoo, that happened to us.
That's another story.
We have a lot of stories. Clearly, we love stories. Who are you? What do you value? What do you want? I'm pretty impressed I can write with my fingers all taped up like that.
It looks great.
Thanks. So the who are you, this is again the personal and the communal. Actually, Maddie, can you? Actually, I'm almost done. What do you value? This is where your story starts to really come in. You get to clearly name those values. What do you want? The specific, the big picture. Start with the big vision. And then specific ask. That's our recipe. Questions, thoughts? Yeah.
I have a strategy question. Because we had a recent short meeting with our county supervisor staff, and they kept saying, get to the ask. And the problem was, it was about a different issue than this. Our issue was so complicated that like the ask would be confusing if we didn't lay the groundwork.
Mm-hmm.
So how, I mean, I guess this is bad, these can be complicated too. It's like, so how do you, because these people are trained to like, what do you want from me, what do you want from me, what do you want from me?
Mm-hmm.
And how do you get the hook so that they're listening to you before the ask? Because I feel like we lose them once we get to the, we might lose them if we get to the ask too quickly.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because they've decided that's not, as one person, that's adjacent to my, you know, I was like, no, it's not. And that if you would listen to what I'm saying, I'm going to tell you why it's not adjacent to your responsibilities. It's in the middle of your responsibilities. do you kind of know what I'm asking?
Yeah. Like, how do you capture their attention and
get
them to write it off? Yeah. I mean, we do our best. I think oftentimes, like, I'll start. I have a couple different strategies we can think through. You can sandwich it with your ask. So saying, like, I'm here to talk about this.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to share a really personal reason why this matters to me and how I got to thinking this way on this thing. So leading with the ask and very quickly moving into the story, not letting them interrupt and get into the policy shenanigans with it.
Yeah, because that's where it goes down a rabbit hole
mm-hmm.
of the why not. And it's like,
mm-hmm.
you understand.
Yeah. Then I think just trying to really like spend time with your story beforehand and try to be as compelling as you can and do research about this person, like my little stalker book, right? But you can go on your elected's website and figure out kind of what seems to matter to them, and you can also craft your story around that. So trying as much to connect with them and identify their values, and then weaving in your story to be compelling and to make it a person-to-person conversation. Those are kind of what comes to mind. But sometimes, you know, sometimes you just gotta like swallow it and have a tough meeting. Sometimes you have a legislator, like we have one that we meet with quite regularly who we, like her thing is rare earth minerals and like she can make any issue about that, right? Like, so, you know, having to do diplomatic redirects and say, you know, yeah, that's really important and I appreciate your leadership on that, but what we're here to talk about today is that our water is polluted with PFAS and we're drinking from water bottles because of it, and that's not okay. So having to bring something back and try to, as much as you can, direct the agenda of the conversation.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
And I'll say, like, sometimes there are crappy legislators or aides who will try to push you out of a meeting. And, like, I just encourage you to, like, stay strong. Like, remind them that you took time out of your day to come talk to them and that you live in their district. And, like, sort of kind of what Jessica was talking about. If they start asking a bunch of wonky policy questions, you can say, like, you know, I don't know the answer to this right now, but I can find out from our coalition partners. But I'm here because this is really important to me because... So, like, make them pay attention to you, which can be hard.
And I actually, strangely enough, love when I get asked a question I can't answer because it does give you an opportunity to pivot back to what does matter. So... another story. Bye, Kia. Safe travels.
Bye.
Bye. I was going to share this story. So, one time I was testifying at a committee hearing for the state legislature, and I was on a panel. I mean, I was probably like 24 at this time, so pretty young, on a panel with people who presented as male. I was the only woman, and the legislators decided to pick on me, essentially, and like ask question after question after question, and they asked about like Enron or something that happened before I was born. And you know, so I eventually like just kind of was like, well, I don't know about that. I'm not the policy expert here. You could ask these folks. But what I do know is that when I'm sitting where you are in 40 years, I don't want to look back and say, wow, we should have done something before the world was burning, right? And like got applause and like...
You said that?
Yeah. There's a video of it.
Oh, wow.
Woo! So, but you know, again, saying, you know, that's a dramatic story. I don't always tell it because... it's very rare for something like that to actually happen. But when you're more in a meeting and someone says, well, what is the fiscal note on this? Blah, blah, blah. You say, I don't know. I can like put you in touch with someone who can, but that is a chance for you to say, but like Maddie was saying, I'm here because of my faith. And we don't need to know if something is right or wrong. Like, you know it in your gut, right? And so you, again, don't have to be a policy expert to be a faithful advocate.
And there's all kinds of things that can't be measured by numbers or facts.
Absolutely. Yeah. Katie said so much that can't be measured by numbers or facts. I just realized we've been not good about passing the mic around for the recording, but that's okay.
You've been repeating it, so.
Oh, great. We have a bit of time left. If we can go wherever you would like. If you want a bit of extra time before lunch, we can wrap up. If you want to practice sharing your story, you can spend some time with the worksheet and practicing it out loud, which if you were at worship last night, you might have heard my spiel, but I think when you practice something, the more times you say something, the easier it is to say it. So we could go that route if you'd like, or if there's anything else. Oh, and... we have some little salmons. So unfortunately, Maddie and I were like, what's an action we can do for this workshop? And the the climate period closed
on
Wednesday for the work we were doing around the clean fuel standard. So one thing that we have that's just kind of a, you can do it any time, and we've gotten creative, is having these little salmon cutouts. And this is something we use in our work around the Lower Snake River salmon recovery. And so it's kind of a writing your prayer, your hope, why it matters to you that we have a future with abundant salmon. Writing that on the little buddy, and then we could take pictures with them. We do a lot of like photo petitions is something that we've gotten more into with the pandemic life. We have a whole stack of these. We often like take them to events and we have like string them up and hang them to get folks' attention. So if you would like to write on a salmon, we welcome that.
And both of Washington senators are people of faith.
Yep, we're Catholic. So that is something that we are in talks with some Catholic leadership too about mobilizing around. So what? How would you like to wrap up here? What would be most helpful to you all?
If you want to learn more, what are these things up here, Jess?
We have some publications up here that we produce. I will point to this one, the blue one here of our Earth Letter is all about faithful advocacy. And a lot of the tools that we shared are involved in that. Our most recent one is the red one here, and it's getting talking more about campaign-specific advocacy we've done on fossil fuels and the decade that we spent fighting coal and then oil and now fracked gas. And then this rainbow one is about kind of just holding hope when things are challenging. We also have some other materials from our Shemitah program. We've got bookmarks, we've got stickers, we've got our Greening Congregation stuff. So we've got lots of resources, and we have more of the Share Your Story handouts too if you want to take extras, so you can have one to write on and one to have as a template moving forward.
On the back of the bookmarks, there are QR codes?
There are QR codes.
So you can learn more?
So you can see our website and learn more about us and get connected. Well, I think we'll call it at that, but if you want to practice sharing your story out loud, I will stick around and am happy to be a conversation partner. Katie will get you that language that you're asking about, and we hope that you hang out with us and do faithful advocacy together and bring that back to your community. It'd be cool to see how Holden could maybe do advocacy together.
I imagine your legislator knows about Holden.
Hope so.
Thank you.